Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
This is Chuck Coughlin on Breadbox Media. Setting the record straight. This is part two of a verbal essay to alert those that would leave the Catholic Church as a reaction to the abuse scandal among the Catholic clergy. The details of this story are everywhere in the media, so I won't go over that. And we must start out to say that these acts are despicable, and we do criticize them, and we don't defend them. This is a dissection. This is an examination of how such a thing could happen. Is it new, or is the church always this way? It's a part of a wider cultural decomposition, dismantling of our culture, that occurred during the last century, in large part due to subversion that started with the Soviet Union and the KGB. And as you know, the Soviet Union ceased to exist in 1989. But by that time, they had placed generations of agents in our various institutions, educational institutions, in the church too, in the government. In the Franklin Roosevelt administration, three of his most highly placed advisors were actually agents and had everything to do with the loss of China to the communists. When Roosevelt was trying to aid Chiang Kai-shek, and his efforts were sidelined by these agents. Most notorious, of course, is Alger Hiss, who was the one advisor that went with Roosevelt to Yalta to meet Churchill and Stalin after World War II to divide up the Middle European countries. It was Alger Hiss that went with him, the Assistant Secretary of State. We have abundant records now that Alger Hiss was actually working for Stalin and betraying Roosevelt in the United States. He went to prison for perjury because it was difficult to prove the other crime. But subsequently, with the opening of the archives and all this, has become clear. Now, what does all this have to do with the abuse crisis? It has a great deal to do with it. It's integral to it because there was immense propaganda war, and the war goes on. You know, I enjoy, as I travel around the country, going to public libraries and seeing what they have in their collections, and I love libraries. I always feel a certain sense of excitement when I go into the library. But when I go to the sections on religion and the part of the shelf or the shelves devoted to the Catholic Church, I always find these certain books, they're anti-Catholic books, they're propaganda, they're disinformation. The same books in all these libraries. I'll give you an example of two of them. There's a book describing the relationship of Pope Pius XII and Hitler that says that Pius XII was soft on him, that he cooperated with Hitler. Well, that's far from true. This is Hitler's Pope by John Cornwell, a British journalist. That book has been effectively dismantled many times, and the other excellent books, which are always missing from those libraries. Pius XII was, as an international figure, the earliest and most vocal opponent of Hitler. Later quieter, working instead behind the scenes against the Nazis, and especially Hitler. There's a former Romanian KGB officer, Ion Pacipa, Ion, I-O-N, Pacipa, who has written extensively about the effort to defame Pope Pius XII. Their real target was Pope John Paul, but he was alive and an effective spokesman, and they thought a better candidate would be to invent effective and destructive lies, credible lies, about the dead pontiff, Pope Pius XII. And they did so. They employed 1,200 people to produce movies, a Tony Award-winning play called The Deputy, which was attributed to a English playwright that had nothing to do with writing it, depicting the Pope cooperating with Hitler, The Deputy. It was very famous, but entirely false, entirely disinformation. It was actually authored by a huge committee of the KGB in Romania. I want to mention a book that presents a more favorable sign of, and a more accurate sign of Pope Pius XII. The Pope Spies, a recent book, describes the greatest spy network in Europe at the time was that of Pope Pius XII. It was very effective against Hitler. Another book, anti-Catholic book, is Constantine's Sword, describing the first Catholic Emperor Constantine and all his reforms, presenting him in a very unfavorable light as hardly a Catholic at all. The book twists the truth and has been effectively rebutted by other books. In Defense of Constantine is one very effectively dismantles that first book. Now, interestingly, I haven't been able to find that book in a public library, although it was quite widely reviewed in premier publications. That book is Constantine's Sword by James Carroll. I don't know who picks the books for our libraries, but it's apparent, and from many, many other observations and data points, that there's a powerful neo-Marxist tilt in our cultural institutions, our universities, our elementary schools, our middle schools, our high schools, the press, TV, the media. It didn't happen by accident. It was a slow and gradual process achieved by placing agents, double agents, in prominent positions in these institutions of false propaganda about the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is one of the great exemplar moral forces in our Western culture, in Christendom. It used to be called Christendom. I like to call it Catholicdom. What I've witnessed in my lifetime is a loss of faith in Catholicdom, Christendom, in the Western Christian culture. Not for real reasons, because there's a false history. The other side of the question has been very effectively argued and proven in a number of fine books which are not on the shelves of our public libraries. You assemble all these small details, and the overall picture emerges. How did this happen? Well, it didn't happen by accident. How did our clergy become infected with these abusers of children? Did it just happen? Did it just happen as part of the wider cultural war, the culture comp that was going on? Or was the church specifically targeted? Well, my friends, the church was specifically targeted. Let's talk about Bella Dodd, and I promise to do that. Bella Dodd was an organizer for the Communist Party of the USA, CPUSA, from 1932 to 1948, and from 1944 to 1948, sat on the CPUSA's National Council. She's one of the senior officials, therefore. She also served as head of the New York State Teachers Union. She was expelled from CPUSA in 1949. Ostensibly, she was expelled for representing a landlord in a legal dispute with a renter, which was a violation of the party's bylaws against recognition or defense of the rights of private property. However, Dodd's expulsion from the party was actually part of a larger purge following the ouster of Earl Broder as the CPUSA's general secretary. She was a brilliant lawyer. She was an idealist. She believed that the purpose of communism was to help the lower class. Once she was a senior member of the Communist Party, she learned that they were not in the business of charity, that their objective was not a charitable one, but a revolutionary one, to overthrow the U.S. government. There's no question about it. I want to quote from her autobiography. Here it is. Early in the fall of 1950, I went to Washington to argue an immigration appeal. I had planned to return to New York immediately afterward. It was a clear, crisp day, and I walked along Pennsylvania Avenue toward the Capitol. Near the House Office Building, I ran into an old friend, Christopher McGrath, the congressional representative of the 27th District, the old East Bronx area of my childhood. I had not seen him for more than a year. When I last saw him, he had taken me to lunch and given me some advice. He greeted me warmly, invited me into his office. I was happy to go with him. There I found Rose, his secretary, whom I had known. When we were in his private office, he said abruptly, "You look harassed and disturbed, Bella. Is there something I can do for you?" I felt a lump in my throat. I found myself telling him how much he had helped me the day he had taken me to lunch, and how good it had been to talk about my mother to someone who had known her. I recalled how strange that luncheon visit had been. For the first time in many years, and in a noisy restaurant in Manhattan, someone had talked to me reverently about God. The people I had known in my adult life had sworn in the name of God, or had repeated sophisticated jokes about religion. But none had ever talked about God as a living personal reality. He asked me if I wanted FBI protection, and I must have shivered noticeably, though I was afraid I was reluctant to live that kind of life. He did not press the issue. Instead, he said, "I know you're facing danger, but if you won't have that protection, I can only pray for your safety." He looked at me for a moment as if he wanted to say something else. Then he asked, "Bella, would you like to see a priest?" Startled by the questions, I was amazed at the intensity with which I answered, "Yes, I would. Perhaps we can reach Monsignor Sheen at Catholic University." Rose put in several calls, and an appointment was made for me late that evening at the home of Monsignor Fulton J. Sheen. I was silent as we drove to Chevy Chase. All the canards against the Catholic Church, which I had heard and tolerated, which even by my silence I had approved, were threatening the tiny flame of longing for faith within me. I thought of many things on that ride, of the word fascist, used over and over again by the communist press in describing the role of the church in the Spanish Civil War. I also thought of the word inquisition so skillfully used on all occasions. Other terms came to me, reactionary, totalitarian, dogmatic, old-fashioned. For years, they had been used to engender fear and hatred in people like me. A thousand fears assailed me. I wondered if he would insist that I talk to the FBI. Would he insist that I testify? Would he make me write articles? Would he see me at all? And then, before my mind's eye, flashed the cover of a communist pamphlet on which was a communist extending a hand to a Catholic worker. The pamphlet was a reprint of a speech by the French communist leader Thorez, and it flattered the workers by not attacking their religion. It skillfully undermined the hierarchy in the pattern of the usual communist attempt to drive a wedge between the Catholic and his priest. By what right, I thought, was I seeking help of someone? I had helped revile, even if only by my silence. How dare I come to a representative of that hierarchy? The screeching of the brakes brought me back to reality. We had arrived, and my friend was wishing me luck, and I got out of the car, rang the doorbell, and was ushered into a small room. While I waited, the struggle within me began again. Had there been an easy exit, I would have run out. But in the midst of my turmoil, Monsignor Fulton J. Sheen walked into the room, his silver cross gleaming, a warm smile in his eyes. He held out his hands as he crossed the room. "Doctor, I'm glad you've come," he said. His voice and his eyes had a welcome which I had not expected, and it caught me unaware. I started to thank him for letting me come down, but I realized the words that came did not make sense. I began to cry and heard my own voice repeating over and over with agony, "They say I'm against the Negro." That accusation in the party resolution had made me suffer more than all the other vilification, and I, who had for years been regarded as a hard communist, wept as I felt the sting anew. Monsignor Sheen put his hand on my shoulder to comfort me. "Don't worry," he said. "This will pass." And he led me gently into a little chapel. We both knelt before a statue. It was a statue of Our Lady. I don't remember praying, But I do remember that the battle within me ceased, my tears were dried, and I was conscious of stillness and peace. When we left the chapel, Monsignor Sheen gave me a rosary. "I will be going to New York next winter," he said. "Come to me, and I'll give you instruction in the faith." So that did happen. As a matter of fact, in August of 52, Bella Dodd publicly announced that several months before then, she had been received back into the Roman Catholic Church. She wrote about that. Easter was approaching, and Bishop Sheen said that I was ready.
I had no baptismal record, and a letter of inquiry to the town I was born in Italy, produced no result,
though I was reasonably certain I'd been baptized.
So it was decided that I was to receive conditional baptism.
I was baptized by Bishop Sheen at the font at St. Patrick's Cathedral. Mary Riley and Louis Panucco stood on either side of me. Godfrey Smith and a few other friends were with me, too.
And that's how Bella Dodd describes her return to the Catholic Church. After her defection
from the Communist Party in 1949, she revealed that one of her jobs as a communist agent, listen to this, my friend, after her defection from the Communist Party in 1949, Bella Dodd revealed that one of her jobs as a communist agent was to encourage young radicals to enter Roman Catholic seminaries. She claims that before she left the Communist Party in the United States, she had encouraged
1,100 young radicals
to infiltrate Roman Catholic seminaries and religious orders. She's quoted as saying, "In the 30s, we put over 1,100 men into the priesthood in order to destroy the church from within. The idea was for these men to be ordained and then climb the ladder of influence and authority as monsignors and bishops. And then they would disgrace the church by creating scandals." There's other evidence of this. In 1953, she testified before the U.S. Senate about widespread party infiltration of labor unions and other institutions. On March 11th of 53, the New York Times ran a front-page article. It was titled, "Bella Dodd Asserts Reds Got Presidential Advisory Posts." The article reported that Dodd swore before the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee today the communists had gotten into many legislative offices of Congress and into a number of groups advising the President of the United States. The New York Times report on March 8, 54, that Bella Dodd warned yesterday that the materialistic philosophy, i.e. dialectical materialism, which she said was now guiding public education, would eventually demoralize the nation. In 54, her book, School of Darkness, was published, wherein she expressed the opinion that the Communist Party structure was, quote, "in reality a device to control a common man." So you could see that she was describing the party's long campaign to bring communists into the educational institutions, and I'm not talking about universities alone, into the boards of education, to bring a materialistic philosophy into the education of our youth. In other words, to separate the youth from their traditional culture. Of course, the Soviet Union is gone now, but the meme is not gone. It's like a standing wave that continues to exist because it's a contagious idea. Once you place an agent high in an organization, that agent brings others in and he controls the hires and the promotions. And so when he's gone, they often unaware that they are supporting a materialistic philosophy, a communist cause, an anti-Christian philosophy. These people, unaware that they are anything but faithful Americans and Christians, often, were called by Stalin useful idiots. Useful idiots. Because they didn't really know what they were doing. They didn't know the source of it. And they exist today.
There's much more to know about Bella Dodd. You might take a look at it on the internet.
Another point of data in support of what I'm saying
comes from a priest named Walter Cizek,
Society of Jesus, SJ. For 23 years, this Jesuit priest was imprisoned in slave labor camps in the Gulag Archipelago. He had gone to Russia from the United States with a tremendously courageous but foolish mission of trying to evangelize in the Soviet Union. Now, he was a very tough man, and he survived it. yet he had to keep the fact that he was a priest a secret, and he would hear confessions and conduct mass in great secrecy. If they had found out, they would, of course, have tortured him and probably have killed him. So he labored for 23 years as a prisoner in the Gulag Archipelago, which he survived and returned to the United States and lived for a long time after that. But during those 23 years, he did encounter two other priests. There were probably others who kept it secret. But one of them was a young man who was a Russian and was fluent in American English and had gone through the seminary in the northeastern United States and become a priest. He was placed in a parish, and his mission from Moscow was to create a scandal, a homosexual scandal, in the Catholic Church. He failed in this mission, and actually he became a rather good priest in his way. So he decided to leave the priesthood, and he fled. Tried to become a layman, but the communists tracked him down, and they snatched him. Having failed in his mission to defend the Catholic Church to create a scandal, he was tried in Russia and sentenced to decades of hard labor in the labor camps of the Gulag Archipelago. This is what he told to Father Walter Cizak, who passed on the story in his autobiography. The name of the book is With God in Russia. It's worth reading. I predict reading a book like this will make you somewhat less displeased about your own problems, to see what misery some of us are condemned to. Well, this has been the second and last segment of this podcast, giving some of the background information on what may have produced the cultural atmosphere that made this current scandal of child abuse in the Catholic Church possible. There's much more material like this. I've only given you a small sketch centering on Bella Dodd. If you're interested, I suggest using her as a starting point and going on from there to reading some more contemporary books about the subversion of our culture, about the destruction of our culture, the culture war, the culture comp, which some pundits have observed that we have already lost. The culture war is over, and our side lost. The Catholic side lost. The Christian side lost. Sometimes it looks like it. I don't agree. I'm fighting a rear guard action here. It is my mission. Join me in it. When they say the war is lost, the culture war is lost, I say no. Persist, persist, persist. Our historical record has been so distorted and omitted and whited out. The historical record that is so glorious of Christianity, and most especially of our beloved Catholic Church. It is my mission to set the record straight. I intend to go on doing it. Join me. On Breadbox Media, I'm Chuck Coughlin, setting the record straight. God bless us all.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.